Hey everybody, JJ Cooper, Jesus Cano, another of the Baseball America Prospect Podcast deep dives. Today, we are talking all about the Seattle Mariners, a system that, an organization that is coming off of one of the better years in team history. Obviously, there is a that streak that the Mariners are still looking to end, which is hey, you know, let's see a World Series appearance in Seattle at some point. But very good season, and still a very interesting and a very good farm system, especially at the top. Jesus, great to see you. Your first year doing the Mariners, like diving into this system, I feel like it's got kind of a nice mixture of there's some bats, there's some arms, but then it's really kind of top heavy too. Like, what was it like putting together the Mariners list?
Well, first off, it was my first everything, first handbook season, first year at BA, and just first year doing top 30s in general. And I've always been a prospect fan since I was a kid, and never really knew what the work that went into, you know, building prospect lists went into. You know, it's not just, you know, oh, these stats look cool, this player should be good. No, it's talking to scouts. It's looking at a lot of underlying metric. It's looking at a lot of video, and it's a lot of back and forth. So, I mean, this handbook season, you know, I hope people go out there and go buy it because a lot of work went into it, and there's a lot of really good stuff there. But in regards to talking specifically about the Mariners, I mean, it was a very big contrast compared to the other organization that I'm assigned, which is the Colorado Rockies. Just like you mentioned, it's top heavy. And the Mariners were, you know, a team I grew up watching a lot because I watched a lot of, you know, AL West action going on because I grew up in California, and just having a little bit of familiarity with them, but especially seeing, you know, a lot of these players come through the backfields. Like, in fact, I think the first time we met was at the Peoria backfields, and we were watching the Mariners play, and a lot of the guys that are on this list, like
Guardians, Lazar Mariners, Montes,
Ty Pete. Yes, exactly. You know, I got to see him, and now I got to write about him in here and stuff like that.
Michael Arroyo.
Yeah, exactly. And like you mentioned, it's a very top-heavy list. It comes down, you know, there's drop-off, which we'll talk about later on. But I think it's a really good, well-balanced list, too, with a lot of good players at the top, a lot of good pitching, a lot of solid pitching towards the end, too, and stuff like that. But I think there's a lot of excitement to be built off of it. Like you mentioned, you look at that Seattle lineup, the pitching rotation, most of it is homegrown, you know, Cal Raleigh, homegrown talent. So you see a lot of players that the Mariners were able to develop, you know, Julio Rodriguez being another guy that they signed internationally, develop, and, you know, has became a really good player for them out in center field. And I think the state of the farm system right now, I mean, it's in a good spot for a team that just came back, you know, being inches, you know, pitches away from becoming a World Series appearance. So they're in a really good spot right now.
We're going to jump right in. The first question we ask, when we ask each week on the deep dive, is how difficult was the decision to rank Colt Emerson number one? I'm going to say not that hard. I'm going to just going to guess that this was a pretty clear number one, even in a system that took a very elite college pitcher at the very top of the draft.
Yeah, and I mean, that was the general consensus from everybody that I'd consulted within the organization and just within, you know, scouts and stuff like that, that seen both players play. Maybe there was maybe one or two people who thought Anderson should be the number one guy. But Emerson, you know, was the number one guy last year, and I think only got better this past year. And I think the biggest, you know, a progression that we've seen from him this past year is his power really grew this year. You know, he was known to be a contact hitter, and I think just to paint it into perspective, you know, 2024, four home runs, 2025, 16 home runs. And that has to do with just him being able to develop and fill out his body a little bit more than it has been in the past. That's what I've talked to people. And I think that just took such a huge stride in him. And I think everybody becomes, you know, has remained the same. He improved his defense at shortstop. The arm is average, has strong in strings. And for every level has been a steady riser, you know, made it up the AAA last year. And there's a lot of talks to him right now, you know, being a candidate to be filling that role at third base, that vacant role at third base right now that Seattle has right now. And I think there's a solid possibility for him to be able to do that because he makes the contact, the powers clearly show up, you know, and he's going to be a guy that's going to be an everyday shortstop, third base type with a high floor, you know, regular. And I think it was a pretty slam dunk decision to be able to have him at the number one.
This is kind of the answer to the question that obviously the Mariners last year did a good job of really bulking up at the deadline. They added Naylor, they added Suarez. Mm-hmm. Okay. Sure. Well, Suarez is gone, you know, and there's kind of, it's Ben Williamson probably to start the year, but that's kind of a hole. I think you would say, like, that's not like their long-term plan. Ideally, little bit of an unknown at second too. Cole Young probably going to get a chance to kind of be the second baseman, but that was a position where he had that chance last year. And then they kind of let, you know what? We don't know if you're necessarily ready to be the full-time second baseman. So a little bit of unknown there, but Emerson being not that far away really is kind of the, I feel like he kind of unlocks a lot of this, which is, okay, whether it's Crawford at short and Emerson at one of the other spots, or eventually maybe even Emerson at short, he's not that far away. Like you said, he reached AAA, and he really could kind of, even I don't think it's crazy to think that maybe in the second half of the season, he's kind of a big boost to this lineup, kind of a guy who maybe there's a little bit of an acclimation process, but he's a higher upside guy. He's a more impactful player than, for instance, say a Ben Williamson. It could be that last year the Mariners did a really good job of trading to bulk up at the deadline. This year it may be that they get a talent infusion in the case of Emerson coming from within, I would think.
No, absolutely, for sure. And I think one thing too, like Emerson maybe spent like a week or two at AAA just to end the season and get his feet wet. But as we've seen, and you've been around this game, you know, maybe longer than I've been alive, respectfully. And you've seen, you know, I feel like teams have just been more aggressive. I feel like teams have been much more aggressive with their prospects, and they're not afraid that even if this guy just got a smidge of time at AAA, you know, they're going to heavily consider him to be in that opening day starting rotation, but starting lineup. And I think, as you mentioned too, I mean, what difference does it make? You know, is Colt Emerson more impactful on the AAA team, or is he more impactful on the Mariners team who has high expectations to this time? You know, I would say, you know, reaching the playoffs and reaching where they were last year, I don't think that's the mark anymore. I think the mark is bringing a first World Series to Seattle. And I think how much better is this lineup with Colt Emerson in it? If we see the Colt Emerson that's progressed throughout his entire career and has remained steady through it, it's a much better lineup. It's a homegrown talent. They're not going to cost them any money. It's not going to cost them any trades or anything like that. It's a guy that you guys went out and picked up, you guys developed, and you guys have seen it and they're really high on, and he could come in and fill in that role. So I think it's a really good possibility to be able to see him in that, whether it's the opening day or whether it's down the road.
I would say with that, like, that's going to be an interesting thing to see in spring training, because to me, like, there is also this balance, right? Like, it's completely realistic and fair to say maybe Emerson needs more time in the minors. But at the same time, you also kind of know if he, again, let's just lay it out this way. If he shows up and in spring training, you're like, this guy's one of the better guys on the team, right? Well, then it does get tougher, because this is the great thing about one of the things that happened to CBA. Colt Emerson, I'm going to a little sneak peek. To be PPI eligible, you have to be in the top 100. Okay. We can't speak for anyone else's. I'll tell you right now, Colt Emerson's going to be in the Baseball America top 100. Give that little bit away. Not a big shock here. He's going to be really high in the top 100. But assuming, again, Emerson's going to be in everyone's top 100. And if that's the case, at that point, then if you keep him up, you basically very quickly, you have to bring him up very early in the season. But if you do, and let's say that he did win Rookie of the Year, let's say that down the road, he, you know, cup next few years, he was somehow in the MVP balloting, like we saw with Bobby Witt Jr., you can earn an extra pick. So there has to be that little bit of a calculation to this as well. If Emerson shows up to spring training and it's like, oh, he needs more time. Okay, that's fine. You know, more time probably is April, May, maybe June, but it could get interesting if he shows up like you just laid out. So that leads us to the second question, which is a lot of this top 10 is the same top 10. You know, Colt Emerson, Lázaro Montes, Ryan Sloan, Michael Arroyo, Farmello. There's a lot of names in this that were in last year's top 10. Cole Young has graduated, but they've also added Cade Anderson. Would you say, is this system better or worse than where it was last year?
I would say it's slightly worse. Just, and this is just a smidge. It's not like it's a complete jump off from, like, you know, a top five to like a top 15. You know, I think this is still a top 10 system. I think there's a lot of really good talent at the top. But they've also, you know, like you mentioned, there's been graduations, there's been trades. You know, they traded Brandon Garcia, they traded Ashton Izzy, guys who maybe aren't like, you know, trendsetters or like big or anything like that, but they're still guys that added value to the system. Harry Ford was traded as we were writing the prospect handbook, so they lost a decent amount of guys, but they also added a lot of really exciting arms and hitters in the draft class. And I think, you know, you mentioned Cade Anderson definitely does see a boost, but I think also there's been a couple other pitchers too that they selected that I've talked to a lot of different people when doing this prospect handbook that they're very, very high on with the stuff that they've been able to do. And again, this is a thing that we're, you know, going to talk about later on, but you know, it's a pitching factory out there, you know, with the Mariners. And I think they found their niche, they found what works well for them, and they went out and did that in the draft. And I think the one thing too, while doing the prospect handbook, is not a lot of teams do this, correct me if I'm wrong, but the player development side actually goes hand in hand with the draft process is what I've heard. So you've got, you know, it's not like the PD is going to have guys who just come in and it's going to be like, all right, here's what we got, work with them. These are guys that they all collaborated with together and looked at them and like, okay, here's what works well, here's what we've done, here's what fits this profile. Okay, boom, we already have a certain knowledge about these guys. Let's get to work instead of, you know, them showing up to instructional league or rookie camp and just, you know, see what we have. So see what they have. So I think it's like, to answer the original question, a little bit, but I think it's still in a really good position. I mean, you look a lot of the guys that they have, Emerson, Anderson, obviously, you know, when looking at our draft coverage, like he is probably one of the better, most polished guys. There's a reason he got picked that high up. And I think, you know, the Mariners were also very, you know, thankful that he fell down to that slot when Tyler Bremner was selected number two overall. And you know, there's a lot of guys with really good upside there too and everything like that. So I think it's like, you know, there's a lot of potential for it to get a lot better too down the road.
The thing that stands out with that is like you said, like there should be a little bit worse from the standpoint of graduations, but also they did make trades. Like it wasn't that it cost them the top end of their talent, but they did trade for Naylor. They traded for Suarez. They brought in help at the deadline as well. It sure helped that they kind of won the lottery like they did the year before. They didn't win it, but they were one of the big winners, you know, and that getting to pick where they did kind of, I would say, kind of equal out some of the graduations, some of the trades.
And like you mentioned, too, in those trades.
Kind of the next question. Go ahead.
And I think to one thing you were mentioning, right, like the trade acquisitions that they were able to do, they got Eugenio Suarez, they got Josh Naylor, and they didn't need to give up a lot of players. You know, they didn't need to give up a lot of high-end players. You know, there was nobody in the top 10 that get traded, and the only guy that got traded in their top 10 was Harry Ford, who was blocked out by Mr. Cal Raleigh. And they ended up getting, you know, a pitcher in their bullpen that they really liked, and it's going to make an impact for them down the road. No. So they didn't need to give up a lot. I was just so amazed that they, for the guys they went out to go get, they didn't need to give out a lot. Like, I would think, like, a top 10 guy would have been in there, but there wasn't. And I think that's impressive to have remained it in such a good state.
I will also say, though, and we did kind of lead into the trade deadline with this. The great thing for them was they needed low cost positions, right? If you're like going into the trade deadline as a team and you're like, what do you need? Front of the rotation starter may not be available. And even if it is available, it's like, okay, get out your wallet. You're going to pay really high in prospect count. First base, third base on a veteran who's on an expiring contract, those are the moves you could make that while they're still, you know, you're going to give up something. I would say that the what they got back to see what Naylor did for them, especially post-deadline, improved a position that really was kind of a weakness for them. To do it like they did, it really is impressive. Mm-hmm. But the other part of this is, like we said, this is a top-heavy system. It's also one. We talked about the Emerson. We would expect that Cole Emerson will no longer be eligible at this time next year, which leads to the idea of, okay, so who's next? Cade Anderson, like you said, Cade Anderson, number two on the system right now. But we don't even know, like, depending on how Cade Anderson's development, this is a pretty polished college pitcher. I would expect that he might be eligible, but that's not a certainty, is it?
It's not a certainty. And I think as I got the questions in advance, I really had to think about it, because Cade Anderson could be a guy that could be pitching in the starting rotation by August, you know, you know, it's up to Seattle what they want to do with him, but he has the moxie, he has the posh to be able to go out and do that right now. But it's tough, you know, it's really tough. He didn't pitch off the mound after he was drafted. They kept him at the complex, and from what I was told, he's going to start pitching off the mound. In a couple of weeks, maybe even this month. So it's going to be interesting to see. Like, I'm going to go with the safe bet. I'm going to go with the safe bet that Cade Anderson is going to be the number one prospect by this time around last year. But if Mr. Cade Anderson has graduated, I'm going to go out on a limb and say that Ryan Sloan could be the number one prospect this year around this time next year. I mean, he's shown really good development, has a really good frame at 6'5", with 3+ pitches, a 90s fastball, wipeout slider with a plus change, and has a really good feel for the zone at such a young age, and has a front-end starter upside. And you know, I was able to watch him play this year when he was pitching with low A Modesto. And he, you can see all those skills right there going on. And I think as he gets older, as he puts on more develops more into his body and gets more, I think he has the potentially to blossom a little bit more. So if Cade Anderson is, you know, billed as advertised and is pitching in Seattle at some point this year, I think Ryan Stone's going to be that guy. But if not, the safe bet is Anderson.
You're being modest. That's one of the times you saw him. Because I also remember you saw him spring breakout because you went to the Seattle game. I was in Phoenix at that time, too. I was at Salt River for the D-backs versus Royals on the same night. But I remember watching Ryan Sloan pitching on the mound on the TV in between innings. Like, oh, good. I got to see Sloan a little bit. You've got to see him in person. I've only seen film.
You're right. No, I'm proud to say that looking at this list, I think the only – people that I haven't watched pitch in person were Cade Anderson and then Luke Stevenson, who's at number 9. But a lot of these guys, I mean, I was able to watch in person, so I take a lot of pride in that. So yeah, but no, definitely good to see them go out. And it's going to be, you know, I'm getting cabin fever being stuck in here, man, just waiting for spring training to start. I'm looking to see who's already in camp and stuff like that. They'll go out and get video, but it's going to be nice to add and see a lot of the guys, you know, making their stateside debut too and all that stuff going on. So it's going to be exciting.
We just mentioned a couple of pitchers. I could put it this way. When you talk about how important development is for big league clubs, I think the Mariners are one of the perfect examples of they are where they were last year. You've already mentioned a lot of them. Cal Raleigh, Julio Rodriguez, and then you look at the rotation and you look at, you know, it's not one guy. It's like that they've got this wave of guys. They've got, you can, saying even like, is George Kirby their best homegrown developed pitcher? Is it Brian Wu? Is it Gilbert? Like you could, there's a variety of types of arms that they've developed. But when I ask you the question, what is this organization good at developing? What comes to mind?
It's pitching immediately. Like you just mentioned, you look at the starting rotation, and their rotation is a big reason. I mean, they're a well-constructed team at the major league level, but the rotation was a big reason why they were able to have so much success and had that deep postseason run. And, you know, it's maybe if they have a healthy Brian Wu, you know, they're in the World Series, you know, because he just sprung up so much compared to where he was in the past couple of years. And you look at what they have right now. I mean, Cade Anderson, like we mentioned, who's the guy they took, he's very polished. You know, I think they're going to do some refining, some retuning, but I don't think there's necessarily going to be a lot of PD going on there just because he's so advanced. But Ryan Sloan is a high school pitcher that they took that we mentioned earlier, right? And then they went out in the draft, you know, 2 years ago, Gerangelo Saintia gets in, and I've heard a lot of really good stuff about him. I got to see him. Obviously, you know, the big thing is that he's, you know, the rare true switch pitcher, but I mean, has so much upside as a righty, you know, with the fastball slider combo. And then other guys that they went out to get this past year too, like Griffin Hugues was a guy that I heard a lot of good stuff on. Teddy McGraw, who has dealt with a lot of injuries, but I think at his best, he's really good and has closer potential if they feel like that's the route that they should take down the road. And then other guys too, like Michael Morales, Mason Peters picked in this past year, and then Morales and a couple other, you know, guys that they have out there too. So it's pitching too, and they have the raw young talent, some projects that are be able to do it. I think as we were talking on the call earlier, the back end of this list is a lot of pitching, and it's a lot of relief pitching. With guys like Robinson Ortiz, who, I mean, they picked in the Rule 5 draft, so he's mostly a Dodgers prospect, but they find guys in the rough like Charlie Bailenson, Lucas Kelly from ASU this past year, and even a very low submarine throwing pitcher like Tyler Cleveland, who is a guy, you know, who had a, you know, 80 85-mile-per-hour fastball, and they find a way to develop him. You know, I saw him in the fall league. And so there's a lot of interesting things to be able to – for them to be able to build upon, and I think the pitching will be there. They actually, you know, lost their pitching coordinator in Stefanos Stroop, who's now over with the Rangers right now. So not sure if that void has been exactly filled out at the moment, but they're in a really good spot to be able to just, you know, build upon what they've done with the pitching and stuff like that.
I want to shout out, you said they lost their pitching quarter. This is not a new thing for the Mariners, because I want to go back to, like, one of you, if you want to talk about the inflection points to me for the Mariners turnaround, one of them is a move they made that was really risky a couple of years ago, which was they basically said, here are the keys to our pitching development to Max Wiener at a time when not many organizations were saying, Max was, to say that he was a top, you know, pitching development prospect, you could say, but he was very young for the position. It was really kind of taking a little bit of a leap of faith and taking a kind of a little bit of a gamble, but on someone with some really interesting ideas and really talent. It clearly worked. That's when you start hearing about, you know, again, it's not just Max, but Gaskamp and the Mariners kind of really developing this ability to take pitchers and really find a way to unlock more from them. You look at this rotation we talk about now, and that was a lot of that development. And then again, Max Wiener's gone back. He's got, you know, college, you know, one of the best pitching coaches in college baseball now, but the system has continued to develop pitching. And they're having to do this while getting kind of rated talent, you know, as far as coaching talent, you know, time after time. But it is something that really does stand out here. And it is one of the reasons, I would say, that in addition to developing guys like Cal Raleigh, in addition to developing guys like Julio Rodriguez, and by the way, also in addition to finding, because you've also got to develop those little pieces who are lesser, not the stars, but guys who are productive contributors as well. They've done that as well. That's going to wrap up the video portion of this. But if you are enjoying this, go to the Baseball America podcast feed. If you're watching the video, we have more of this because we're going to keep talk about sleepers and kind of where this system starts to tail off a little bit prospect wise. And we'll do that right after this.
Every day, companies you've probably never heard of are making billions off your personal data. Your name, address, phone number, even details about your family are pulled from public records in the internet and then sold without your consent. There's an entire marketplace making money off of your privacy, and most people have no idea it exists. Aura's online security capabilities have allowed me to feel safe when it comes to my online presence. Aura fights back. They remove your personal data from broker sites and keep it off. Aura also alerts you fast if your information shows up in a breach or on the dark web. But Aura is more than just a data broker removal. It is a full digital security suite that protects every part of your life online. Aura gives you a VPN to stay private, antivirus to block threats, a password manager to keep logins safe, and spam call protection to cut off scammers. Aura also scans the dark web for your most sensitive information, like your social security number, bank logins, and passwords, and notifies you instantly if they're exposed. Aura also removes what is already exposed, protects what's not, and puts you back in control. Right now, you can try Aura free for 14 days when you visit aura.com/remove. That's enough time for Aura to start removing your personal information from data broker sites. Sign up today at aura.com/remove and get the peace of mind that your privacy, identity, and finances are safeguarded. That's aura.com/remove. Certain terms apply. See the site for details.
And we're back. So, Jesus, before we kind of talk about big picture, I want to do something fun. Who's the guy outside of the top 10? Can't be a sleeper if you're in the top 10. Who's someone outside of the top 10 that you're like, watch out, this is someone you need to keep an eye on. You're going to be hearing more about probably in the next year, 2 years, 3 years down the road.
Well, obviously with me being based in Phoenix and seeing a lot of complex stuff, you know, I'm always excited to see a lot of the international guys or even draft guys make their pro debut or internet or stateside debut. One guy that I heard just great reviews upon over in the Dominican Summer League for them was Leandro Romero, their shortstop. You know, I know Yorger Bautista was the high big name in their DSL team this past year. Unfortunately, did not perform the way that they wanted him to. But Romero was the standout out of that team. You know, had such great improved contact for a guy that repeated the DSL, and his EVs were much higher. And you know, the other thing too, like, he is a very good defender. Like, there, you know, I've seen a lot of really bad defense. And looking at videos and stuff like that, that was sent to me about the way this kid's been able to play defense. He has a smooth, you know, gets low on the ground, has a quick release, and is a really good premium defender at that position too. That is starting to develop a little bit more, you know. And this is a guy who I've talked to other people who have, you know, gone on and, you know, scouts who've seen him in the DSL, and they say this guy is legit. This is going to be one of the more impressive guys to watch over here when he makes his debut in the Arizona Complex League. So I think that's one guy to be able to watch too, specifically on the hitter side. Romero, I'm very excited to see him play. Yeah, I think that's going to be my sleeper pick for him. Yeah.
But there's a number of interesting names after the top 10. You went through some of this with, especially on the pitching side. At the same time, though, when you do look at this system, I would say that overall, this is one of the more top-heavy systems we've seen this year. And I mean by that basically this is a system where, the way I put it is that a lot of times you see a system and it's like, okay, you have kind of this gradual diminishment. The Mariners are a system where guys who are, there's a number of top 100 guys. There's a number of guys who I describe as they're on that top 100 periphery, where whether they're on the 100 or not, they're in the top 100 discussion. And then you get not far past that, and then you get to guys who are not only not in the top 100 discussion, but would not be in a top 300 discussion. Where do you kind of see what I would call the prospect cliff happen here? Where does this go from, oh, this guy's a top 100 type, or this guy's a good, you know, middle of an organization type, to more, okay, now we're in a much thinner group?
I would say after Mason Peters, which is in the 18 to 19 range. I think after that is when it starts to drop off quite a bit more. Like I mentioned, you know, the back end of mine is a lot of relievers. So there's not a lot of prospect, you know, value when it comes to people who are being developed as relievers straight up in the minor leagues. But then there's a lot of other players, you know, who have shown, who have, you know, are close to the majors, like Ryland Thomas and Victor Labrada, who are just going to be fourth, fifth, you know, fifth outfielders, and are going to be great bench pieces, are going to be great pinch runner situations, but it doesn't scream, you know, that they're going to develop beyond that. And I think that's a lot of the things that you see. There's also a lot of really younger players on this side that I may or may not be a major leaguer one day. And then there's players like Jaron Sunstrip, who I think shows a lot of potential, but just continues to show a lot of swing and miss issues that spiked in Double A. So I think after that, like, it really drops off quite a bit. And it's just, you know, I think the back end of this list was a little bit tougher, especially doing it for the first time during handsbook season. It's like, okay, let's look at a different carousel of guys who's going to, you know, be able to project to be a little bit more. And I think for them, it drops off after that.
I would also say with that, like, you, this is where the moves they made last midseason kind of really do kind of, you feel them, not having the Ashton Izzy's of the world, the Brandon mm-hmm. Garcias of the world, who may not be elite prospects, but they kind of thicken out that middle to that back of a top 30. Again, that is one thing I'll say with this is those are generally renewable resources, is the way I would describe them in baseball, right? You have drafts every year. You sign players internationally every year. And as you do that, it is easier to fix that part of it than it is to have elite top 100 prospects. You would much rather, if I was picking and you said you have your choice, you can have a lot more depth than the Mariners have, or you can have the top-end talent the Mariners have, but not that much depth. Sign me up for the top-end talent any day of the week. Colt Emerson gives them one of the best prospects in baseball. Cade Anderson's one of the best pitching prospects in baseball. I would say maybe second tier from the standpoint of, like, elite pitching prospect, but one who hasn't had a chance to do it in pro ball yet. So we will not put him in that top tier of the, you know, kind of hard to put him a tier with, like, Nolan McClain and Treya Savage, who not only have done it in pro ball, but have done it in the major leagues and are still prospect eligible. There's one other guy where I do want to, because I want to go back to the top before we wrap this up. If you notice, if you're a very attentive Mariners prospect watcher, You may notice that we have started referring to Michael Arroyo outfielder, not Michael Arroyo second base, you know, infielder. How much does that change, like, your what we project with Michael Arroyo, with the Mariners' plan to kind of look at him as a position change, you know, like a primary position change for 2026?
Yeah, I think the big thing when looking at that, it doesn't have to do because he sucked at second base. That wasn't the case at all. He was a solid defender there, but you look at that infield that they have, and he's pretty blocked off, and I think that speaks to how much they believe in the bat, because he has elite bat-to-ball skills with an advanced approach, and, you know, despite his size, you know, has very quick hands, struggles at times versus velocity, but he's shown to be able to make contact. He's shown to be athletic, and, you know, he's gotten some reps right now, playing outfield, but I think the biggest thing is to be how much can he adapt. You know, is he playable out there? Usually your middle infielders are the more athletic players on the field and can easily translate into, you know, multiple different positions throughout the field, but I think that just has to do with how much this speaks to the bat. You know, they want to get him in that lineup in Seattle. He's relatively close to it, right? And they wouldn't be making this position change if they didn't see him as a part of their future, and if they didn't see him as a guy whose bat is going to be necessary to it. You know, how it develops, how it goes down the road, you know, I think there's still, you know, stuff that he needs to be able to prove, but I think the bat's going to be able to hold up for him to be able to you know, develop on his outfield and just be able to perform out there. I think that's a really good position for him to be in. It's tough because he was a solid defender there at a position that, you know, having a bat like that specifically in the middle infield, specifically at second base, would have been good, but it's you got to do what you got to do to, you know, be able to be in the position to win most games. And if they feel like Arroyo is a guy that's going to win them games in the outfield, they're going to sure put him up there.
I would say with that, this is something also, we talked about the Harry Ford trade earlier. I do think, like, okay, this is my, like, my kind of like end of a podcast, little kind of theory here. Like, Harry Ford is a good athlete for a catcher. That said, I also would say, like, there was this time when the Mariners were looking at, oh, could Harry Ford move to the outfield? Obviously, he's kind of blocked at catcher. We've got Cal Raleigh. And I do think, no, he is freed up in some ways by going to the Nationals. He can catch. But his athleticism, as it does with most catchers, he does not run nearly – Harry Ford does not run as well as he did a few years ago. If Harry Ford had shown with that kind of on-base ability and all that he has, oh, this guy's a really good outfielder, then Harry Ford might still be a Mariner. You saw that they like dipped their toe in the water there and then was like, no, he's probably more of a catcher, third catcher on the team at the end of the year. With Arroyo, what we're going to see now, like you said, the key thing we're going to find out here is okay, it's not a guarantee, but if Arroyo can be a corner outfielder with that bat, again, the hitting ability has always been really impressive for him, and provide real solid defensive value out there in the outfield. But there is, like, clearly a path here from the standpoint of, yes, Julio Rodriguez is in center. Yes, Randy Rosarena is still there in the outfield as well. And they do have Victor Robles. But I would even say with Victor Robles, like, there could be a job share kind of environment that opens up down the road. And as you said, this is the key thing with this Mariners team overall. This is the thing with this Mariners team. So many of these players have double-A prospects, have double-A or higher experience. So they have to kind of start really figuring how the puzzle pieces all fit together, because there's a big difference between we've got this Class A, you know, shortstop, second baseman, whatever, and we got to figure out where he plays long-term. It's a big difference when you're saying that versus this guy's going to be in triple-A and we're trying to figure out where he's going to play.
Yeah, no, exactly. They have a plan ahead of before time, and I think Arroyo should start the year in double-A. I think there was a lot of stuff that he needed to work on a bit more once he was challenged a little bit more at the position, but it's like you said, like, you're going to be able to figure this guy out. Same thing with I know Harry Ford, when he was in Arkansas, that's when they started to put him out in the outfield, and obviously that was a short-lived stint to be able to put him in the outfield. But yeah, no, I mean, Arroyo, the bat's there, and I think that's the biggest thing, is the bat's there. How's he going to be able to translate to the outfield? I think they have enough confidence in him to what they've seen from this entire time for him to make that shift, but I will be getting a first look at how he does in the outfield firsthand, because I will be spending plenty of time in Peoria to watch as many Mariners prospects, and who knows, maybe I'll be able to say I watched, you know, maybe 75% of these guys by the time I'm writing the next handbook.
It'll be fun. I'm planning out travel and all too, so probably bouncing around the backfields with Jesus in just a couple of months. So we hope you've enjoyed another edition of the Baseball America Prospect Podcast Deep Dives. If you're enjoying this one, and this is not, you know, we know that a lot of you are prospect fans. You're going to listen to all of them. I promise you, if you have a favorite team and we haven't covered it yet, we will. We're knocking out all 30 of these. Our goal is to have 30 of these done before really the game, spring training, big league games really get rolling. We'll see. We might miss that by a day or two, but if you've noticed, we're rolling out 4 of these a week. We're keeping them coming fast and furious, both on the podcast feed. And if you enjoy this and you only listen to the podcast, I would recommend checking out the YouTube, Baseball America YouTube channel as well. For one, you get to see our beautiful faces here, but more than that, much more than that, especially on my end, you also, we put video of the players and all. So if you, one of the reasons when we say Jesus has seen all these players, Jesus shoots video of them. Josh Norris first shoots video. We all shoot video of them. So if you want to see what these players look like on the backfields, if you want to see, you know, player, these prospects in action, we put clips of those on these videos as well. So you're not just looking at two talking heads talking to a camera. There is more to it than that. But again, we do appreciate you subscribing to the Baseball America Prospect feed, the podcast feed, which has Prospect Podcasts on it, and check out Baseball America's YouTube page. And by the way, of course, check out baseballamerica.com, because if you enjoyed this, I promise you there's more than you. We will keep you busy for weeks just reading the stuff. We have reports, scouting reports, on all 30 prospects in the Mariners organization with tools grades for all of them. And we do that for all 30 organizations. We have international signing day, first day of signing day, you know, period. We have all that. We have, we have draft coverage. We have the top 100 coming very soon. So much over at baseballamerica.com. For Jesus, I'm JJ. So long, everybody.